What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It's another episode of the AfterBuzz TV After Show for Preacher. It's Season 2, Episode 8, titled Holes. We can't wait to break the whole thing down for you guys. We'll see you in just one second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Driving.
We should have had the boys are back in town playing because the whole panel's back together.
All right. Applaud yourself.
Raise the roof on that.
Hey.
I never raise the roof. I should never do that again.
Welcome, guys. It's AfterBuzz TV. We're here. It's Monday. We're talking Preacher. We're officially halfway, more than halfway through the season now.
Wow. Oh, really? Already?
Yeah, 8 episodes. Yeah. I think it's only 13, right?
Yeah, so there you go.
So we got some more Grail. We got a bunch of hell. We got all kinds of funny hell jokes, which I was a big fan of this episode.
I was ready for hell.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So it's AfterBuzz TV. We're going to break down this episode for you guys. But before we do, let's introduce the crew back on the far side of the table. We've got Matt Maher.
Hello, everybody. I'm Matt Maher. You can find me on all my social things at TheMattMaher, 2 T's, 2 R's.
What's up, kids? You can find me on social media at DogLikeNate. Nate Miller here again. Excited. Talk about some Preacher.
Come on my right.
Dave.
It's me. It's Dave Child. You can find me at Amazon Dave Child on the Twitters and the Instagrams and DaveChild.com. I'm Dave Child. Good to be here.
I hope somebody's like, I'm going to check out this AfterBuzz thing. They tune in one time and they just see this, and that's all of who they ever see. Ooh. So in their mind, they're just like sure of who you are. Oh, here we go. The boys are back in town.
There we go.
Nice.
I'm glad it's the Thin Lizzy version and not the Everclear version, because the Thin Lizzy version is a lot better. I'm Ben Bateman. You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, or Instagram. Let's talk a little bit of Preacher, guys. And of course, before we do that, if you guys want to leave a rating or review on iTunes,
please
stay high in the standings. Please. Free content we will always provide.
Write something. Don't start. Write, if you say the boys are back, write something.
The boys are back now. This is awesome. Whatever.
Write it.
Whatever.
Just talk about
how
pretty my eyes are. Whatever. Just
they are.
Write whatever. They are.
I go for that.
I wasn't going to say that because I think we all know that about Dave. But
you have long eyelashes. I'll
if you want to point that out, it's cool. So. Anyway, guys, let's talk about this episode. We got a lot of hell. We got a lot of a lot of arse face. There were some really nice touches to hell in this episode. Yeah. I thought I really enjoyed that. What was the name of the candy bar? Like Zanzu or something?
Zagnuts. I think it's an actual like candy bar.
I was trying to think. When I heard it, I was like, does that mean something? I was trying to, and I couldn't.
It looked like a candy bar. That's the kind of thing that I'm sure that Seth and Evan and Sam, they all probably hate that candy bar.
I bet it's like a Canadian candy bar.
Something that like everyone hates, and it's like an inside joke. Yeah. And it's only Zagnuts.
That's what somebody should tell us in the chat. I should only
I got to get the chat up. You got the chat going?
I do, yeah.
Okay, good. Tell us on the chat if you know what that
Zagnuts are.
Yeah, Zagnuts. Yeah. That's the one. So that was pretty wonderful. And then and then the whole duct tape, toilet paper gimmick. I thought that was funny. I like that those jokes, the jokes like that are becoming, I feel like every episode there's 4 or 5 of them now that they get tossed in that are just like a nice little wink and a nod.
Yeah.
That's Seth Rogen humor.
And it's also this invention of hell, what hell looks like, is just not in the comics at all.
No.
Hell looks pretty much like hell like you would see in a children's history, like a prayer book in the comics. This is very different, and I love to see like their version of it. As someone who read Sandman and all those other comics and Good Omens, and where people are looking at hell from different perspectives, this is a great version of it. And also, we have to talk about the Cape Fear opening of Arseface.
He had the Tracy tattoo.
With the big Tracy tattoo on his back. Oh, that was great.
It's pretty wonderful.
I love how like we watch it with the closed captions here, just so we make sure we get everything. And the first thing it says is Cape Fear music. Just like really hammers home the like, all right, we get the reference.
Are we about ready for another Cape Fear remake? We probably are, right? 91 was the last one. I mean, that was 26 years ago now.
Let's not ask for remakes.
Thank you.
They just keep coming.
We need to encourage it. It'll just happen.
It just seems like the kind of movie that by now Christian Bale would have like, you know, played the role or something like that, right?
I think they're like rebooting ER again.
What you were saying about hell though. It's funny because I feel the same way with like a lot of the depictions and stuff that we've seen and also like within the comic, but I feel like it could still be the same hell. Because we haven't really seen like where you know, when you get sent to hell, where all those people are. We always see, like, right. you know, where Lucifer's hanging out, or, you know, major right. characters, where that stuff is happening. And especially when they, you see, when we get that camera pan tilt up and you see, like, that there's no roof above them, that they're in this kind of, like, pit, and that yeah. there's all these other, you know, yeah. looks like other prisons and stuff. Like, it's kind of like, I mean, it gave me a feeling of, like, there's a lot more to right. hell than just the prison that keeps, you know, the people there.
True.
Which yeah. I think is cool, because I want to see more of it.
Well, and Hitler, I think, definitely was adding to that, too, of yeah. telling Eugene, like, you don't even know.
Yeah.
Because he was a janitor, yeah. so he knows.
Well, that's that makes a really sense. Cool. It really does. Yeah. Especially, they were really hammering home, like, the, you're going to get punished if you do good right. thing. Like, yeah. you know, catch yeah, helping yeah, yeah. someone if they trip. Or
don't they pick up the marker. It's,
yeah. Which is interesting. So, the power thing, I guess we know now for sure, is yeah. the evil is what powers that.
Well, because, no, so I get it that they have a certain amount of power that's geared towards the population of that block of hell.
Yes.
So that population has to match, like, who's supposed to be there. But because otherwise the power's strained, and that's why it breaks down.
But I think what was insinuated is that part of the power arrangement is that the bad people that are there, whether it's the bad energy or the evil energy or them being bad to each other, that right. creates the power, and that creates the balance that makes things normal. Because that's why when Hitler got there, he's like, oh, they gave me all this stuff because they expected him to come in
yeah,
and
right,
take
yeah.
control of a block and be super evil and stuff, and that would be good for them. But instead, he came in and he's being all quiet. He's reading cross books.
I read it as hmm. like, okay, once, if they're able to get Eugene to the point where he is broken down enough that he belongs in hell, uh-huh. that he's, like, evil enough to belong in hell, uh-huh. then they'll be able to get the power that they need.
Okay.
Because then he deserves to be there, and he's accounted for. Okay. And it kind of is, like...
Interesting.
Okay, so that person deserves to be there, so they'll get enough power.
There's, like,
I just wonder
barometer,
like,
that once they yeah. pass, then they're, like, okay.
It's, like, right now, it's, like, someone's leeching off of the system because they're not... It hasn't been planned for them to be there. But right. if they get them to be, yeah, if they bring them into the system, if they're like, oh, we'll make you, instead of being a mobile home that's parked outside of a house and is taking from the house, if we make that mobile home a house, then it's able to patch into the system.
I
think that's what's happening.
It was very Wachowskian, the layout of the whole thing, because you know, you have all these people. I mean, even when they panned up, it reminded me a lot of the pods in the Matrix, the circular right. nature of it. And you have all these people, and they're like sort of little pods, and all of the power of hell is coming from these people that are trapped in yeah. these little pods.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, definitely had that.
That was part of why I interpreted that way, of that them
yeah, that was
reliving that thing over and over again is yeah. like, it's like the hamster in the wheel. The emotions or whatever it is.
But that doesn't make it... It means, like, that's... But why is it breaking down? Because that should be...
Because he's like a contamination.
Yeah.
He's not supposed to be there.
Too.
Right. He's not... I mean, Eugene is not supposed to be in hell. He's just not.
Yeah.
Like, as his soul is just not... It's not... It's
so
like
why
not
don't they
fit.
Just kick him out if they know...
They don't know it's him.
Do you believe Hitler?
I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I think Hitler yeah. might be right, but I also, I don't know.
I think this is terrible to say on the show. I think I'm with Hitler on this. Where
where you think if he turns himself in that he's going to get punished? Or
yeah,
something, or
well,
something.
I think, yeah, I think they'll break him down until he's
But
like,
my question is, can you be made, can your soul be turned
evil?
To an evil soul in while you're in hell? Is there something you can do in
still
hell?
I'm going to go and say that's probably just one of the bases of hell, or bases, I don't know, of hell. Like, if yeah. like even if you're evil, they want you to be, and we saw that with Hitler, like if you're evil, they're like, okay, now you're going to be like evil prime because you're yeah. in hell. And so I think with anyone, they want to make anyone evil, even people that aren't, whether people that were supposed to be there and the people that aren't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because that goes against, to me, when I'm looking, that goes against human nature, kind of, as we look at in so many stories that we love. It's all about the redemption of human nature.
Right.
And hell is like, no, there's no redemption here at all.
Yeah, I mean, I've always imagined with hell that, like,
I'm glad that this conversation went deep quick, everybody.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is part of what this is, the whole like
basis of the show.
Yeah, just the story is, it's supposed to make you think about these types of things.
I've always imagined that in hell, like, if they got a good soul in hell, they would consider that to be a bonus. Like, it would be a win if they were able to get a good soul into hell. Because, like, they won. They corrupted some. They somehow managed to get one of the good ones.
Yeah, but they have to corrupt it in order to make it fit into hell.
We got Mother Teresa party. Exactly.
That's where the line is blurry. Because he wasn't corrupted. He was sent there in a way that's not supposed to happen.
Yes.
It broke the rules.
Which so
that's why, like... He's like, it's like, how did you even get in the door? Like, how did you make it past security and get checked in and get your own room? Like, we're like, why?
Yeah.
We also have to make the obvious connection that it's there to the prison system, because that's why they're setting this up so it is like a prison.
Right.
Because of that sense of people who often go to prison. The big problem with the whole prison system
is they become institutionalized.
Yeah. It's institutionalizing them, it's making them worse. And it's not actually redeeming anyone.
No. There's no rehabilitation.
It's not about rehabilitation or being redeemed. It's about fitting them into a mold that makes them even worse and fits the business of the prison system. And the business of hell is like the business of the prison system. Mm. And that's kind of what they're building off of, which is great. It's like an awesome way to view hell while being like a nod towards a bigger thing that you wouldn't expect from a show that has, like, you know, a hand job in it in hell, or in a previous episode, all the stuff that Air Star was doing.
Oh, that was... I love that episode.
Yes, it was my favorite.
That was supremely the hand job moment in this episode. Which
it was incredible.
It was, like, straight out of the book.
Do you guys find that as bizarre as I do, that they, like, have elected to basically make Hitler, like, a... They've made Hitler like a pretty like
the good guy,
kind of. Yeah, you like kind of root for Hitler in this show.
He's Morgan Freeman in the Shawshank Redemption.
I wrote like Hitler is a savior.
Yeah,
like Hitler, but also too, if you think about it, what is smart about it in that, like, what else like more evil can Hitler do? Like, it's kind of, he's done it, so it's kind of like, there's only way for this as a writer, I'm like, probably the only way for this character is to go is up, you know.
His flashback scene when you see him in like that restaurant is like one of my favorite scenes of the show. It's just the most anticlimactic.
Oh,
like,
I hope we see more.
I really
want to know what he is, because the whole point of that is it has to be your biggest regret and your biggest moment of turning. So something happened that he regrets more than millions and thousands of people that he's killed.
Well, and why is he helping Eugene? Like, is there going to be an ulterior motive too? Like, he really is just conning him?
There must be.
I think that's what it is.
I don't think that they're going to give us Hitler and just end the show with Hitler being like a pretty redeemable character.
I think they might. I don't think they'll do it in a way that'll make it seem like, and that's why we're saying Hitler's good. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're doing what you were saying about how the only way for that character is up. But I think he's going to be like, it would be nice if he's kind of, but I definitely deserve to be in hell. Like, he doesn't want to leave because he knows his place. That might be an interesting way of taking it.
I've referenced this conversation a few times, but when I got to ask Seth about this a few weeks ago, when you guys decided to put Hitler in the show, did you guys, like, list out all the options and say, like, oh, is there a better option than Hitler? And he's like, well, there's definitely a better option than Hitler.
exactly.
There's always a better option than Hitler.
Always a better option than Hitler.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. So, anyway, that's where we open up. We get all of this prison system stuff. We do see Eugene's handjob hell, which is pretty hilarious.
And yeah, well, what happens is, so he gets put in the hole, and what happens there is he doesn't just see the version of his hell and his regret played out in front of him. He sees something even worse. He sees something that didn't happen, but if it did, it would be worse.
Right.
So it's ratcheted up like a couple of knots.
Well, which happens directly after the most joy he could have.
I love that. It's one of my favorite moments ever, like in any kind of comedy, when the girl's like, you hear like the toilet flushing. It's like, oh, there's someone else here. It's not like there's someone else here and they just open the door. It's like they've just taken a dump and that's what's been happening. It's like always the most satisfying, like, rub-ins. What was so great in that scene to me is like the subtle comedy of, while all of it was happening, It wasn't like anything
graphic. You see her movement.
You just see the movement. You just
which we're not going to do here. I just think I started,
doing it. Yeah. You just see the circular movement and like the focus in her eyes as she's looking at him. It was just priceless. That's like that's the stuff that just I just die laughing.
Right.
It was just his performance too and delivery of the lines.
It was great.
Of the puns.
And I think there's kind of a... By the way, we'll probably have a little bit of a spoiler country at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
If people don't know, we just talk about what happens in the comic that's a bit different. And I think there's something that is building up here that I'd like to reference later in spoiler country. So
all right.
Stay tuned for that if you want.
So moving on to the other half of the episode, we've got this continuing drama going on with Cassidy, who's now we actually get his first name of Prontius.
Yeah.
For the first time, we hear him talking to somebody named Seamus on the phone. Now, is Seamus somebody that Cass has talked to before? Is that the voice from the first season who was helping with the Vampire Hunters on the phone?
Oh, that's a good point. I'm not sure.
Ooh,
I was wondering about that. Because he's on the phone in the very first episode, hiding out in the bar.
I feel like it is.
It feels like it would be, right?
Because I remember hearing the name.
When he's in the bar in the first episode and he shows up, he gets on the phone with somebody and he's telling him the Vampire Hunters were after him. I like that the Vampire Hunter plot is just like gone for now. We haven't seen a word of it.
I hope it comes back.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And the guy he was talking to seemed to be some like kind of coordinator or like mentor or old friend or something. And I just have a feeling it's the same guy. I'd have to go back to the first season. Anybody in the chat, if you know or remember, let us know. But
also, if it's a reference to something in the comic book, make sure to put like a little spoiler thing in front of it.
Definitely. But so we find out that his name is Prontius, which that is something as comic book readers, we eventually are aware that his name is Prontius. But I was wondering how long it was before we got that.
Yeah.
And also that his father, Dennis, he has this internal struggle going on. And we got another stake placed in the sand here of resenting Jesse a little bit. It continues happening every week. They throw a little curveball at us.
It's happening a lot. It's happening almost more than I want it to.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I kind of want them to take a step back and have a bro moment.
Because every episode, and then every episode they throw another, like when Tulip's like, hey, you want to go out? And we're all thinking the same thing. It's like, don't go out. We all know what's going to happen if you go down this road. And he just doesn't even go there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like another one of these, like, you guys are just driving us so clearly towards that outcome.
Yeah.
It's like, are we really supposed to think that's going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think that... I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, my comment was, I think kind of at that point, I just thought it was so fun and entertaining watching Hell and so sad watching real life.
Really like,
it
was sad.
That's what I put up. It's like everyone seemed so sad and so lost and like just disparate. Is that the word? Even like the shot where Jesse and Tulip, which I thought was a great shot, where they're sitting on the stairs and like they're at opposite ends of the stairs, kind of having this weird. It was just, all just seemed so just divided.
Yeah, and they're all in their different headspaces right now. They're not together. They're all,
very selfishly thinking.
Because with Cass, he's focused on his, you see a little bit, he's so vulnerable in this episode, which is really great to see.
Yeah.
Because he is this foul-mouthed vampire, and here he just opens up his soul a little bit, and you really see, you get a sense of his past regrets. That flashback where he's with the baby Dennis and singing a song and drinking. That's the first time we see... I hope it's the first of many where we see him way back in time in, like, the 1940s.
It was 46 is what it said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too. Like, do you guys like how they throw the nod of the pretty nurse winking at him and smiling at him? Because you're kind of like, he's always probably been this, like, handsome, confident guy. And that's why the guy on the phone says, you have lots of sons, probably.
Right.
Like, he's probably just always been kind of, you know, a little bit of just like a heartthrob. His whole, for like 100 years or something, he's been a heartthrob.
And he also brings up in the conversation things that he misses after becoming a vampire.
That was a great monologue.
Yeah. So he misses being on the beach, and he mentions his family, too. We get a sense of his family where he has a brother.
Yep.
And
he also mentions drugs.
He also mentions how drugs hardly work for him anymore, which is how he's able to, like, go through that whole
bottle
montage that happened a couple of episodes ago. So we're building more of his past, and that's that I love.
Well, and also too, it made me think of, I mean, this is talked about a lot in some vampire stuff, but talks about just boredom, and you know, as far as like that is actually the number one reason why people even do drugs is just boredom. And so it made me, for someone who's just starting to dig into the comics, so but to see that, this makes sense to me why Cass would be would cherish his friendship with Jesse, because can you imagine if you're a bored vampire for hundreds of years and suddenly this person has this Genesis power? That's exciting.
Something he's never
seen
before.
That's exciting to him. Yeah. So I just have so much empathy for that character.
I just felt like it was strange for him to ask that of Jesse, because he was asking him to
heal him, basically.
Heal?
Because
I thought he was asking him to like put him down.
No, I didn't get that at all.
No, I didn't know if he was going to send him to heaven. I didn't know.
I thought he was asking him to like. Put him out of his
misery. What I saw was I realized. Oh, we don't know the limits
of Genesis.
Yeah. So what he could do is say like, "You're okay now," and is that enough? Or your body is healed. Is it enough to believe it? He sent someone to hell. Yeah. He said go to hell, and that person went to hell.
I would say a body can't heal itself with his words, but he did send someone to hell.
Yeah. I think it was a really important moment for both characters. I agree with you, Dave.
Yeah.
I believe what Cassidy was saying is, I don't know if you're able to fix him with the word.
But would you try?
If you can, would you? And I thought it was a really important moment for a couple reasons. Because A, we've seen this really selfish, reckless use of the word to this point by Jesse.
Yeah.
So the gall that he would have to say to Cassidy.
Ooh, that pissed me off for Cassidy.
Yeah, that made a lot of sense.
I don't think that that's what this is for. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. When you're driving that stake a little further, and they're doing it every episode just a little bit, and the look in Cassidy's eyes, which I really thought, as an actor, he played incredibly well.
He was great.
It was so subtle, but like you could tell. You also know, like, based on the fact that he would ask Jesse, because it's a pretty horrible thing to ask, like, you just use the power of God to like save my son, kind of.
It's not a horrible thing to ask. It's something that makes sense.
Yeah, but like,
I would ask him if I knew someone who had the power of God and my son is dying.
I agree. Totally.
The problem, I think the problem is like Jesse could have responded with, "I don't know what it would do. I don't know exactly what to say, and I don't know what would do it, and I don't know if it would do it, and for all I know, I'm going to make things worse."
Yeah.
And you also have to remember, too, it's coming from a place of where it's not like Cassidy is not powerless in the situation.
Right.
He can save him. He just doesn't necessarily want to. So he's looking to Jesse to almost save
take that burden.
He's wanting to save two people,
You know, because then I don't have to turn him to try to save him.
Yeah.
Well, they also keep dangling this carrot of Cassidy being relatively evil. They sort of keep giving you this, like, hint. Not like evil in the context that he would be a villain in the story, necessarily, but that he has a lot of darkness inside him. And they've done it a number of times.
I don't think they've done it, really. I don't think it's there. Because they're setting up... I think we're seeing his vulnerability and him as a person.
Much more his vulnerability.
Yeah, but what would be interesting is, and what I loved is hearing Seamus, the guy on the phone, ask what's his what is he like? Who is this
person? What's his temperament?
What's his temperament? Because you could be, if you turn, it implies that if you turn someone into a vampire, if they're a bad person, it elevates that badness.
Makes it better.
Right.
And I think they need to be someone who has to, like, it takes a very strong individual not to be a monster if they're a vampire, or they need to have lived for a very long time and have monstered out outside of it, which, you know, we don't know what Cass is right now. We don't know. I think it could be one or the other. And I think that's what he's worried about, is if he turns his son, he could turn his son into a monster.
Right. Yeah, none of us really have any idea yet what would happen.
Yeah.
Either if he bit him, if it would have, like, what kind of fixing it would do, and also what would happen if Jesse used the word. They're both
Then the look they gave, though, it was a very evil Cass face.
The end there?
Yeah.
When he's singing the song to his son.
And when he looks at Jesse, when Jesse says no, I think both looks were pretty rageful.
I'm trying to interpret that last look.
Well, yeah, who knows what they wanted?
Yeah,
I think it was supposed to make us think what.
I think so. I also think it's him kind of starting to vamp out. And to me, that last look to his son implied that he's about to turn his son.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think it implied that he's just getting... He's kind of turning his vampire on, and he's about to turn his son. And that's what I read it as, and I'm curious to see what happens next week.
Well, and I think too is that they all are feeling kind of alone and isolated, lonely. And then here we have Jesse, who's not helping him out. And I agree with you this season that they seem to really try to build the vulnerability of Cassidy.
Yeah.
And in the same token, they're making to me, Jesse really unlikable this season.
I think they've done it since the beginning of the show. Honestly, I don't think they've done, I don't think they've done a whole lot to make Jesse. It's probably the one. Of all of the decisions they've made, it's probably the one decision that stands out the most to me as just having a tonal difference from the comic. Is that Jesse in the comic is just this very American old school ideals character, and yes, he has his flaws, but he is that square jawed leader, which is why I say in the comic that really does feel like it's Jesse's story with his two sidekicks, whereas this show is three characters and it's their three stories. It doesn't feel like it's Jesse's story. He's only in the episode about a third of the time most of the time.
But it's also hard to have a Superman. It's hard to do. And this is controversial, but I think there hasn't been a good Superman movie, and I think there could be, but it's
ever, you're saying of any.
Let's not focus on that. Let's keep moving because I'm going to make a lot of nerds angry.
I agree with you. I'll stand behind.
I just think that 100%. Except for like the first like 45 minutes of the first movie, that was good, and then that's after that nothing. Anyways, because it's hard to have someone who is idyllic hero and to make them into an interesting dynamic character. I think you can do it, but it's hard to do it. And one of the ways I think Preacher has done it is take a turn and make him someone who's struggling with his faith.
Right.
And it's making him seem not as strong right now because he's just kind of wavering between the stuff. And I kind of wish we could see the strength in him more.
Well, the sadness you mentioned, Matt, I really thought was palpable this episode for all three characters. And they it just was a lot of moments, a lot of just like low energy moments where you're just like, this is the lull in the journey. No one really knows what their place is supposed to be. There has to be a shift. And I think I understand why they're doing it. It's this point in the season because they really, we're sort of getting to the other side of the arc of the season is going to be the three of them having to come together or break apart in some way, but it's going to drive them in one direction, one way or the other. What's about to happen, it feels like. The Grail stuff that's setting up with these two agents. So actually, let's talk about that a little bit. So Featherstone and Hoover. And do we know their names yet in this? Hoover, she mentions. She says his name, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know if we know Featherstone, but right now I think it's just the lady and the guy.
Well, I think she refers to him as Hoover. I'm pretty sure she calls him Hoover in the episode. Right?
I'm pretty sure also.
I think so, too. Well, we're watching closed captions, so Hoover also started talking when he was off screen, and I noticed it said, like, Hoover.
Okay, maybe that's why Hoover says. I could have gotten
So I think they are that in the credits.
Yeah.
And whether it's... So I think it's okay.
On IMDb, I'm sure they're called that. I love that they're continuing to build this stuff with the Grail. Last episode was my favorite episode of the show so far. I'm just so happy. It feels like we have the comedic villainous side of the story that's now going full force. And there's definitely setting up for something big.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that Tulip was at all aware of what was going on in there? Do you think she was completely oblivious?
I don't think so, actually. I think she...
To
me, she read as... One, she's been hanging out with a lot of dudes.
Yep.
And I think she was happy to meet
another
lady who is coming from an abusive relationship, at least this made up later. And she's dealing with her own trauma and tragedy or with the touch of the saint. And I think she's trying to process that. So she meets someone who seems to be dealing with trauma herself and is also not another dude. I think she's looking for that friendship.
Right.
So I think they're going to build this friendship between the two in at least another episode or two.
Yeah, I think that's the angle that she was going
for. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when you're at a low like that, your defenses are down.
Right.
And so it makes sense. Like, if this was normal Tulip who was, like, at her A game, I'd be like, she would totally see through this.
Right.
But, yeah, I think she's just so wrapped in just sadness and fear.
Desperation.
She's not seen it.
Yeah. I also love how the superficial fixing of the apartment and the apartments and the fridge and everything that she was doing was like, I'm healing because I'm fixing the apartment. But in reality, she's not really addressing what's bothering
her. Well, she's literally covering up a hole.
I mean, the episode was appropriately named Holes.
And holes,
in every aspect. I mean, there's holes in the walls. Each character seems to have a hole in their soul at the moment.
Yeah.
Eugene was thrown into a hole momentarily where he had his version of hell played out in front of him. So they were definitely, hammering home that name. So while at the same time, you know, Tulip's going through this whole stuff with this agent that she meets next door, which, by the way, I love the humor between the two of them. That's why you look like that. That is more setting up like the relationships that I
love. Between Hoover and Featherstone.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I also like how they seem like two normal regular people.
Right.
It's like SVU, whatever. I don't know.
Especially after meeting Hairstar, it's good to be like, and these are the people who work for Hairstar, and they're just like normal people that have kind of a spyness to them.
Yeah.
But they still seem, they're able to banter and talk about Booberry.
We can talk more about it in the spoiler section, but it's nice to see the dynamic.
It
was like the two guys at the Best Buy place.
Yeah, the Dork Docs.
Sure. Dork Docs, yeah. I love that they're just like...
Dork dudes.
All right, somebody killed somebody. Let's look at the video. Those were great guest stars.
That was hilarious.
If we're pivoting to that, are we pivoting to that now? Definitely. I do feel like that was my biggest disappointment with this episode. Mostly because I hate the enhancing thing in TV shows.
Yeah.
Because as someone who edits videos and also works on like Photoshop and stuff, there is a big limit to what you can do on that.
Oh, that's like it's so difficult to get something that small to actually show up.
And I kind of think they missed an opportunity to poke fun of that idea in general.
Right.
Like they could just have these dudes being like, this is literally all you can do.
Yeah. Like, it's enhanced. Blurry numbers.
We've enhanced it. You can't see anything. And he's like, okay, what about the face? Oh, yeah, let's work on the face. No.
Pixelation.
No, it's still pixelated. I can draw a face on it. I thought he was going to say, like, oh, let's show him the real version of the gun then. If we're not.
Right.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah, because then it'll be nice if they made their own fake version of it. Photoshopped a gun into
it. That's what I thought was happening.
To kind of help. But they didn't do that. It was just they actually enhanced it. It was just kind of I thought it was a little bit of a bummer because they could have...
Yeah, anticlimactic. And actually, I actually sort of thought that portion of the episode was a little bit the only lackluster portion. It was the only part of it that was like...
A little bit treading water.
Yeah, why did we just watch this?
It was funny, but as you're talking about it, I'm thinking, why was it there?
Yes, totally.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think it was more of like, oh, he's lost his lead. This is his only lead to
he's lost. He's just desperate.
Yeah, and he doesn't know where to go next. And then it was all a lead up to, on the DVD itself, it said Made with Grail.
Right,
Grail Property Industries. Of Grail
Industries.
How did you miss that? And also, why wouldn't you take the DVD with you?
But also, what does that mean?
I thought of maybe like they made the CD, the DVD-R. You know?
Like they just made the blank.
It looks disc. Like, because there was also like
an ad.
I love the ad. Yeah. Because they're turning everything. The Grail more into a corporation than it is in the comics.
Yeah.
So it's nice to kind of have that be a thing. So I'm curious to see where they go with it, but I kind of wish, I thought that was like a big misstep, because I don't believe that he wouldn't have seen it.
Right. I also don't think he would just he would just get rid of his only copy of it. He would just shred it because he was angry.
That's it.
It just doesn't make any
sense. Yeah, they just, again, I just feel like the whole, I feel like they make Jesse really dumb a lot.
Sometimes. Kind of clueless.
But almost, like, I like that in season one, I felt that you could kind of see, okay, I can see how you can kind of save some things and, like, you know, help some people out. But this season two, I'm like, can you do anything?
I don't know.
Like they're painting him as.
I kind of disagree, because I think there was that really... What I really liked of this season and the first couple of episodes were they were building Jesse up as someone who was badass, is coming from... knew exactly what the souls were.
Right.
And the soul, merchants. I felt like that was helpful to his character because it gave him knowledge that made him smarter than other people in the room. And the more you can do that with a main character, the more likable that character is going to be.
You always say, man, one of the rules in action movie anatomy is, are they the smartest person in the room? It's like, you got it for it to be a strong action hero. You have to be the smartest guy in the room.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that pretty much wraps up the Jesse portion of the episode, because he just like hangs out at Circuit City or whatever Circuit guys.
In the chat.
Circuit Works.
Benjamin Slade pointed out also, if Grail was on the video, it means the angels were working with them.
That is true. Which is interesting, and I think we'll talk a little bit in spoiler country about that. But it's
so. Are we thinking that the Grail and the Angels are working together, and the Grail organized the search for the replacement. And
they would have to, right? Because
and then that's why they killed him. And then he goes up to heaven.
Then he goes up to heaven.
And the angels are like, hey, perfect, you're here. It'll
definitely be interesting to see. We'll have some explanation by the end of the season with that, I'm pretty sure. I think I kind of know roughly what we're going to get, but we won't go there just yet. So let's get into base prediction sign-offs and then do a little spoiler discussion at the end for those of you that want to hear us.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions. So I think next week we're going to get Hairstar.
Yep.
It looks like that on the next week. And also they're kind of setting up, oh, the boss is coming. And we met him last week, so I think he's going to be now in New Orleans working with Featherstone and Hoover about Jesse Custer.
Right.
Focusing on that.
Yeah, I think that Cassidy did turn Dennis, and I think it's going to turn out to be a big mistake. I think it's going to completely come back to bite him in the ass, and I think it won't be next episode that you get the consequence of it, but I think it's going to be one of those things that comes back either this season or next season where it's that was a huge mistake and bad things have happened now because of it, and it's going to be I think Cass might even keep it to himself that he did it. He might say that he died happening. And get rid of him or something or something like that. I feel like somehow Jesse and Tulip won't know that it happened. And he'll lie about it.
They could end up burying him, and then he could come out from the grave.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Something like that.
You guys got any?
Totally my prediction. So now I'm thinking about what would my other prediction be?
Hell.
Show. I think, first of all, I didn't say this earlier, but I never knew R's face was hot. Like, I thought he was kind of cute, but in that first scene, I was like...
And he's got a voice.
I was like, I can sing. You can be my devil.
Closing time. Album's out.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
He's got a couple of albums out. Really.
Yeah, Ian Coletti. He's a handsome dude. I think he was. I heard that he was one of the guys in consideration to play Archie in Riverdale.
Oh, I can totally see that.
Oh, I love that show. I'm so excited. Yeah. Don't get me started on Riverdale.
I'm obsessed.
Riverdale's actually... Archie comics? I thought that was a joke.
No.
Oh, no, it's based on...
No.
It's sexy Archie.
I do a recap.
We'll talk after this. Yeah.
Archie with abs. That's the...
We can talk about Riverdale after this.
I do a recap of it. I'm all in. Like, it's a thing. It's great.
Except Jughead doesn't have a burger until episode 10, and it drove me insane.
It bothered us a lot too.
Oh, I hated it. Anyways. So all you needed to do was Ocean's 11. You needed to Ocean's 11 Brad Pitt it and just have him talking with a burger in his mouth.
Yeah.
All the time, and they didn't. And then when he ate it, I'm like, "What were they waiting for?" All right, okay,
all right, tangent master, let's get back.
I told you not to make me start on Jugface and Riverdale.
What did I do?
What was your prediction, Nate?
So we're gonna see the Grail. I think it looked like in the teaser we're gonna. I don't think we're gonna see Hairstar meet up with them. I think he's gonna meet the group, and they're. Looks like there's going to be some type of conversation that they're going to, observe so they can see the power and stuff. The Cassidy thing. And Tulip, I'm really curious about how that is going to play out because obviously with how vulnerable she is right now, the friendship thing is a good path with Featherstone. I think it's gonna work.
Yeah.
So, that's it. And let's see, for Eugene, I don't know. I feel like Hitler is going to, once they succeed,
Hitler's gonna fuck him over.
He'll be like, it's gonna be like a, all right, only one of us can leave. Thanks for helping me.
Right.
You gotta stay in my place.
I think Hitler's, I don't think they're gonna try to make Hitler
redeemable.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I think he's gonna try to be a total dick.
I think I would, I almost predict that they're setting up Hitler so much as the Morgan Freeman of this.
Yeah.
That I think there will be more references to Shawshank Redemption.
You think he's gonna ask him for a rock hammer?
I think, I think at one point they're gonna be like, oh my god, he left through the poster, or oh, meet me at the tree, or something like that. I think.
I'd be disappointed if they didn't.
Yeah, that would be great.
That's so funny.
So now let's sign out, and then we'll go into spoiler country.
Yeah, that sounds great. Matt Maher, where can folks find you?
You can find me at TheMattMaher, and you can find my other podcasts, including the one about Riverdale, at TVTtime.com.
Guys, you can find me on social media at DogLikeNate. I'm also hosting a few other after shows here, so check us out.
And you can find me at MrDaveChild on all the internets or DaveChild.com. I'm also on the Game of Thrones podcast at AfterBuzz. And so check me out there. And if you want to tweet at me about the burgers of Riverdale, go ahead, or anything you want.
Or Superman movies.
Or Superman movies, if you want to get angry tweet at me. Go at it. It'll be fun. But I love to talk to you at MR Dave Child.
First of all, I don't entirely disagree with you on the Superman thing. I just want to make that clear. Cool. Secondly, I feel obligated to talk about Riverdale now. I do the AfterBuzz show here for it. It comes back in October.
Oh, right.
And I love it. And I actually just at Comic-Con got to interview the whole cast. So if you guys want to see those interviews, you can go look those up on YouTube for BHL. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter or Instagram, and on Wednesdays doing Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. So let's talk spoilers.
Spoiler alert!
If you don't want to hear us talk and ruin things for you about the comic book, guys, this is your 10-second countdown to get the hell out of here and turn off your phone, your iPad, your whatever.
If you're on the chat, bye!
Take off those earphones, but we're going to talk about some stuff. So I just want to say through and through right now, I just feel like there, and I say this every week, more and more, it feels like they're pushing us towards the Tulip Jesse thing, and it's going to be this season. Just feels like they're dropping so many hints. I don't see how we're not supposed to get, you know, Cassie betraying Jesse early. But if they do it, it doesn't make any sense in the show.
Well, they also have to have, because they're also building up a Tulip that is not as passive as she is in the comics.
No.
Yeah.
Because the way that Cassidy betrays Jesse is using Tulip, who is very passive and is kind of just used as a betrayal towards Jesse. But now they have a very a fully developed character in Tulip. So it's the betrayal's going to feel different.
Totally.
And it's going to be a different type of, like, when they get together, which I think they might be building up to, it's going to be a different type of thing. And or you might end up having the whole storyline that happens in the comic book with Tulip maybe seeming like she drops off the map a little bit and then comes back.
Sure.
That could end up happening before that. I think we've already
we'll
talked
see.
About that.
Yeah, but, that's the one of the biggest things. They keep dropping these hints.
Right.
And I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to get away from it.
I think it might be a big tease. I think it might be, make us think that it's coming now.
Got
and
it.
That it's not yet. That it's going to, there's going to be a little Band-Aid put on it.
Yeah.
And that we'll get a little bit more. Because I agree, I think there's a few more things that need to happen before it really makes sense for that to
right.
happen.
Okay. Mm.
One of my favorite things that happens in the book that I think that they're building up to is with Arsface, where he starts to gain a vendetta against Jesse.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels like they're building that up with that whole, hand job thing.
Yeah, now he really... I mean, he already has a good reason, but now he's,
he's already
he's really
sent
marinating
to hell.
In it.
And let's not forget about the fact that they just teased the singing career, right?
Yes! Yes, they totally did.
Right?
Fact that he's singing now... could mean he actually pursues singing as Arsface.
It's one of the more bizarre storylines later in the comic. It's just like this weird, novelty thing of Arsface being like a pop sensation.
Becomes a huge hit.
Yeah.
Even though, they kind of got rid... They had to get rid of the Kurt Cobain was the reason why he blew off his face.
Yeah, yeah.
But, which makes it even more poetic when he becomes the new Kurt Cobain. But, I don't know. They might head down that... And also, I hope they continue with the Cape Fear stuff. And it just turns into him Cape Fearing against Preacher. Like, he becomes the next Saint of All Killers
in a lot
of ways. Which could be fun. I think that could be great.
Any other thoughts on this side of the table?
We also have the Grail that they're setting up. And one of the things that I like is they're nodding towards Featherstone's kind of fascination
with Star,
Hair Star.
And Hoover's fascination with Featherstone.
Yes.
Yeah. And also just their dynamic too of her being, quoting the manual and you wouldn't be fat if you didn't eat those, and him eating the berries and being lackadais, like that. They're capturing the dynamic between the two characters in the comic book perfectly. Yeah.
Wonderfully.
Yeah.
It makes me realize actually last week and this week how important to me the Grail actually is in the comic.
Yeah.
Whereas thinking about balancing all the storylines together, I wouldn't have realized that the Grail was that important. But everything I've seen from the Grail so far has been my favorite thing on the show so far.
Mm. Yeah. But also, if they're setting up that the Grail is working with the Angels, that's a lot different.
Yeah.
Than it is in the comic, where they almost seem to be of opposing forces in the comic.
Right.
So
that's why I was confused about the whole disc thing, because even if does that mean... Because the Angels didn't know where God went. So then, does that mean that the whole thing was a dead end to begin with? Because, or does the Grail know where God is? Because, like, does that, would the disc have helped anyways?
And I, this is one of those moments where I feel like I don't need to, like, go full spoiler. But you remember there's the whole thing with the Grail when you find out why the Grail knows what's going on. Right. What they have. Yeah. And I think that, well, that's what I was thinking, we might get that at the end of this season. That,
okay.
I get the feeling we might see that at the end of the season. It'll start to be a big reveal.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but that's very different than working with the angels. Yeah, totally. So it's, I'll be curious to see where they go. And, yeah, and I think that's the biggest stuff. And I think, I also thought from, I don't know if I said this last week, but I'm curious to see if we've already met God. Like, if the person, when we meet God, it could be one of the characters that we've briefly met. And I thought from last week that the, that preacher on the street could actually be a good God. If we find out that is God and Jesse had been talking to God last week. Would be interesting. Because that's very different from in the comics, where every time we see God and every time we see Satan, even they look like God and Satan from the text, from like the textbooks, from the Bible, from the Bible,
the traditional depiction of
from preschool. I guess I want to say.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We will see you same time, same place next week to count down the final 5 episodes of this season of Preacher. Thanks for watching. Thanks for coming back, guys, and everybody. Yeah. Being back in town, boys. We'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Closing time.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.